Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Annual Prospects Challenge begins tomorrow at Lecom Harbor Center. The Sabres prospects will be on the ice for their first game on Friday, followed by Saturday and Monday tilts. The rookies are practicing this afternoon for Buffalo. We are officially on the ice, so to speak. Marty, rolling along here midweek, Sabres Live.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's a buzz, right? I saw on social media yesterday the logo at center ice, the pictures. Had some people stop me yesterday in the town and say, hey, did you see the logo at center ice? It feels like hockey season's around the corner. Yesterday, about 8:15, I was exhausted. It's dark outside. You know, like I still have the Sunday night Bills game and the late night in the system. So I felt like it was fall hockey season, ready to go. So yeah, I'm excited about this weekend. I'm excited about next week and preseason, but I can't wait till next year when the season will actually start late September. The fact that we have to wait until, you know, October the 9th, October the 7th for everything to start in the NHL, I feel like, let's get it going already.
Yeah, but they defeated the purpose because they added two more games. So it's an 84-game season. Like, obviously, it had to start earlier.
Play a 110-game season and keep it going throughout the whole year. Start in September and in August. Start in September and in August. Let's go.
It's still too many games, unfortunately. I think ideally, you know, a lot of people believe that 70 would help maximize the athletes' abilities and minimize, but we all understand the reality of it. So
hockey-related revenue, that's all it comes down to. And look, I mean, I get it, right? Every sport, the NFL is now 17 games, and they're going to go to 18 pretty much, in a few years now. And the NHL going to 84, I think it was to balance the schedule with the division, the conferences, and everything. Now, there was word yesterday that the league is trying to get more of an understanding of what Atlanta is wanting to do when it comes to expansion. So when they go to 34 teams, will they adjust the schedule again? Will they go
back
to
80? They won't do 33, will they?
They could if there's one team that's willing to spend $2 billion or more on expansion. The owners are not going to say no to that. Now, they would want $4 or $5 billion with two teams coming in. I get that, but I just feel like if one team is ready to go, they may not wait for another. Like we did that at 31 for a while with Vegas before Seattle came in.
Mm-hmm. I still think if you're I think Houston's ready, obviously. Like, so they can be ready at the same time Atlanta could be ready. You know what I mean? Like, there's infrastructure enough.
Enough is the key word because it's all about the money. Can you put the money forward, the $2+ billion, and then, like, you'll play wherever for 2-3 years. That's fine, and then we'll make it work. Oh, and by the way, you mentioned Houston. I'm wearing my Blue Jays hat today, and I know you've been kind of like on the road a little bit, so I don't know if you saw what happened between the Jays and the
Houston's been one of the worst teams in the majors for the last 2 months, and they're still leading their division somehow, so I don't really care.
Somehow, you're right, they're still
and they have so many injuries, I don't expect them to hang on to it, but at the end of the day, you'll just say, well, they lost 39 players to injury this year, so good try.
Good try. You put in your best foot forward. But yeah, but the Jays did win yesterday. So I want to kind of just have that.
I would have preferred your Jays winning over the weekend a little more often than they did.
I know. Well, they lost 2 out of 3 against the Yankees. And after they won the first one, and I was like, sweep them, and then that's it. But anyway, neither here or there. Hey,
by the way, you hinted, and I think it's obvious, although a tree is a tree is a tree. So it may not be a dead giveaway where I am based on what's behind me. Might not immediately.
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them.
You must be in Milwaukee based on the tree behind you. I think, and I, you know, there's so many things that go into it. It's just, we live in a smaller market in Buffalo, mm-hmm. and we make it happen. And a lot of markets make it happen. Like, yes, they have the Bucks here, but Milwaukee also would be amazing as an NHL yes. city. Like
that rivalry with Chicago and Minnesota and yes. even Detroit across the lake and yeah. Winnipeg up the, you know, in Canada, that would be
elite St. Central Louis. Division edition.
That would be elite. I would definitely see that. Look, the Pegulas bought the Bills, right, from the, you know, the Wilson estate, basically, for over $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And now an expansion team in the NHL is getting $2+ billion. Like, that yeah. is massive money when you think about it. And what Seattle had to pay on top of it just for the infrastructure, the renovations, everything, it's insane. So mm-hmm. it's insane. That's where we are now when it comes to sports businesses.
Right.
So Milwaukee, would they be able to put that money together? Didn't know that Salt Lake City, Utah could do it, but you need
also
one person.
Not, yeah, I mean, not a huge population in Salt Lake City, and yet they, you know, they're going to have NHL, or have, pardon me, NHL. I was thinking, like, when the arena is done, it's going to look and feel really amazing that, you know, for yeah. both NBA and NHL there. But yeah, it always takes that one incredible ownership group to be able to navigate the hurdles. But I'm there's a lot of reasons that we don't have to get into. It's just, if you haven't been to Milwaukee in a long time, it is a beautiful, impressive, clean, developing, well, phenomenal sports market, but just a really great city.
And name, like, some of the top college hockey markets and universities, right? And Wisconsin University, mm-hmm. when it comes to hockey, it's in Madison, it's not in Milwaukee, but it's down yeah. the road. Like, you have a hockey hotbed that would be, you know, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and mm-hmm. and that would be great. Now, you're right, it's a smaller city, and I think the NHL is probably looking for the bigger market, the Atlanta, the Houstons, maybe a second.
Because they're available.
Toronto. They're yes. available, yes.
Yeah.
So that would be a big thing. Now, you know, it's something we didn't talk about yesterday, Duffer, and I thought, and it would be interesting because this man had always such a very astute, like, view on things, talking about head injury before head injury, player safety, everything. Was Ken Dryden, who mm-hmm. passed away, you know, 5 days ago now on September 5th. At age 78, and that was actually the date of his brother Dave's birthday, right? Because we talked about it on the show on mm-hmm. Friday about mm-hmm. how that would have been Dave Dryden's birthday, and that we had lost him a couple of years back, mm-hmm. and then later that day we found out that Ken Dryden had passed away after a battle with cancer. But he was such an influence in a lot of things, in the way that players took care of themselves, in the way that, to a certain, like, the position of goaltending. People talk about Patrick Roy and the butterfly. Ken Dryden was really a butterfly goaltender. Tony Esposito, they were two of the different type of goalies because of their size and everything. But yesterday was his funeral. Yesterday in Toronto was his funeral. It wasn't a Maurice Richard, Guy Lafleur type of, you know, big event. There was about 70, 75 people in the little place in Toronto. I read a lot about it, but this is definitely, I won the Ken Dryden Trophy as top goaltender in my midget year, mm-hmm. Which is in my basement bedroom at my parents' house. It actually, one time it knocked my mom almost unconscious. She was cleaning the bookshelf and the thing came down and hit her in the head. And she was sliced for like 5 stitches because it's a heavy piece of glass or whatever. So Ken Dryden, like, cracked my mom's head open. But yes, I won the Ken Dryden Trophy. And I feel like there was always, like, a connection, you know, with with his name and the Drydens and Buffalo and knowing Dave. And so it was a sad moment on Friday when we learned that Ken Dryden had passed away, and everything that he did for the game internationally, the Summit Series, Vladislav Tretiak, Ken Dryden, like just amazing piece of history that unfortunately passed away after a lengthy battle with cancer.
Yeah, there's really no way. I mean, even if you spent today, tomorrow, and Friday talking about Ken, you wouldn't uncover or be able to share fully the brilliance of the human being, let alone the success of the athlete. Like, he was just that capable, intelligent, thoughtful, political, legal, humanitarian, you know, like, or philanthropist, you know, like, it's just, there's so much there, and we live in this, you know, the statistical world, the results world, and it almost, like, it made me feel somewhat guilty that when we were spoiled by Dominic Hasek for so long, and you're always first to put Dom's name as close to the top or at the top of any goaltending list. And even just last week, we had, you know, because we briefly got on Patrick Waugh, Martin Brodeur, difference in playoff wins, Billy Smith, his career playoff winning percentage. It made me feel somewhat guilty that instinctively I don't offer Ken Dryden every single time, because there is no goaltender ever, and I will say nor will there be, you can always leave the door open for exceptions, but no one did what he did. Nobody won the Conn Smythe before winning the Calder Trophy. Nobody.
He came in that year, so his very first year he played in the AHL with the Montreal Voyageurs, but then he played six games with Montreal, and it was Rogge Vachon, Hall of Famer, and Phil Mir were the two goalies there. But you know what? No, I'm going to name Ken Dryden starter, and he played 20 games that year in the playoffs and won the cup. Yep. And he had only played six NHL games, and he came in ahead of Phil Mir, who has had a great career, Buffalo alumni, and Rogge Vachon is a Hall of Famer. And Ken Dryden came in and won a cup right away.
But then has two within 3 years, chooses not to play for a season, comes back, Buffalo beats him in 75, then they win four cups in a row, and he's done. That's it. And this was on the heels.
He had 21 playoff series in his career, and he won 19 of 21, which is incredible. He played eight full seasons in the NHL and won the cup six times. On so in heels, six of his eight seasons, he's won the cup.
On the heels of, like, ridiculous collegiate career at Cornell with a national championship. So as you remember, like I texted the group on Saturday, he basically in his NCAA and NHL careers combined, he basically won four out of every five games he started. Regular season and playoffs. Like, that, imagine if you were watching a sports dynasty sit at an 800 clip. Year after year after year after year after year. And then it's like, oh, I'm good. Done. I have a lot more to accomplish in life. And that was Ken Dryden. And he did.
And after playing with the Etobicoke Indians, juniors as a 18-year-old, he went to Cornell as a 19-year-old. And he was 26-0-1 in his first year. Like, think about it. He did not lose a game as a freshman with the Big Red, and then won the national championship in 67, which is that year. And then he leaves, and Cornell ended up winning a second championship in 70, which is the year that he turned pro. But, you know, the impact that he had for that program, he was always proud to represent Cornell and talk about his days and time at Cornell University, was actually something I didn't know. Learned again today. Is that he was drafted by the Boston Bruins in the second round. Mm-hmm. He was 16 years old when he was drafted by the Boston Bruins and then traded to the Canadiens as a 16-year-old. Think of it. Like,
the only saving grace for the Bruins is that in Dryden's emergence into the NHL, the Bruins did win two cups in three years. So otherwise, because after that, you'll undoubtedly remember how long the Canadiens dominated the Bruins for how many decades. It continued every postseason, never more pronounced than in 1978 in that playoff series and how Montreal won. And yes,
that's a Don Boston Cherry, Bruins, too many men on the ice, right? In 78.
Had the Bruins
that was really the Stanley Cup final because the Rangers had made it to the finals, but the Rangers were basically not as good a team as
Montreal. Rangers
were
79, so that was...
Rangers were 79 where they... Yeah. They got to the finals, okay.
Yes, but they lost in five to Montreal,
Yeah, they lost in five to Montreal. So that's the year that Don Cherry had too many men on the ice and then, you know, goal late, overtime, everything.
Mm-hmm. Well,
But Ken Dryden, I mean, seriously, when you think of the time where Dave and Ken got to face off against one another, which they didn't start that game, but because of an injury, Dave went in and then boom, they, you know, quickly Ken went in and then they shook Ken at center ice. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the Dryden name will live on forever in hockey history for many different reasons. But as you pointed out, it wasn't just the on ice, it was the off ice. 1980, Ken Dryden, like the color analyst for it was NBC Sport, I believe.
No, that ABC.
ABC, Al sorry, Michaels. ABC, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Al Michaels and Ken Dryden doing the Miracle on Ice.
Jeff, it was ABC, was it not?
Yes, he's pointing at ABC. Yeah. But even like, so when Al Michaels says, do you believe in miracle? Like Ken Dryden was so smart to let that sit in and let the sound. And because...
Why am I laughing? You know why I'm laughing, right?
I know why you're laughing. Because there was a,
I do believe in miracles.
There was a Gordon Miller moment at the World Juniors where Jordan Eberle scored late in the game. And he goes, Canada scores. Canada, do you believe it? Do you believe it? And Pierre McGuire says, I do. And Gordon Miller's like, you just ruined the call. But Ken Dryden let that sit in when Al Michaels says, do you believe in miracle? Imagine if Ken Dryden says, well, you know what, Al? I never believed in miracles, but now I do. Like, that would have ruined the call, right? So exactly why we're all laughing.
Or he could have just, like, put it from an, you know, a logical and, you know, unemotional. He could have said, well, there's still more work to be done here in the tournament. You know,
exactly. Team USA still has to win one more before they can be crowned champion and have the gold medal around their necks. Oh, wah. What a bummer that would have been.
it's mildly funny for anyone who has worked in this this media realm, where even today, just on different platforms like TikTok and what have you, but in radio and television, it was always about a soundbite, and you're hoping that the soundbite is small, to the point, articulate, impactful, and Ken. Because he's so well-educated, and he was the president of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I remember I was working for the Leafs at the time, and I always sensed the frustration from media members, because it's like, this guy talks in two-minute answers, and I can't trim down the soundbite to give it proper context of what he's saying.
Because he was smart and well-articulated and everything.
Exactly.
You couldn't say, oh, we'll use the first 10 seconds, because the whole soundbite was so good. But you mentioned soundbite, so... When I played with the Flyers, and I know we kind of, but Jim Jackson.
Oh, by the way, Vegas team of the day coming up.
Vegas team of the day coming up. But Jim Jackson, who is the play-by-play voice of the Flyers TV side, like, he was so angry. I remember, like, talking to him on the plane after a game. And so the Flyers signed a endorsement deal, a promotional deal with Tasty Cakes, those little, like, dessert thing. And after every goal... So, you know, he would say, Simon Gagné scores and for a case of Tasty Cakes, but it would never get used because it would ruin the soundbite because there was always that Tasty Case. And so he was angry because every time they would play a soundbite on the news, on ESPN, on NHL Network, they used Tim Saunders on the radio over the images. And Jim Jackson was like, I'm sick. I haven't had a Tasty Cakes in years, and I'm sick of them right now. but these are, like, in our business, these are things that people pay attention to. Yeah. Like, you want, you imagine if RJ, none of RJ's calls would have made it to TV or whatever, because he had to throw in a soundbite covering a sponsors or whatever, and they would have said, no, we're not using it. Like, it makes a difference, right? So, yeah. So Jim Jackson and his Tasty Cakes was not something that he... So he found a loophole. He would do his call, go through the replay, and then when they would be ready for the face-off, he'd say, oh, by the way, that goal was for a case of Tasty Cakes, and it was way after the fact.
Prospects Challenge this week in Buffalo. The games begin tomorrow. Sabres play on Friday. That'll be against the Devils, 7 p.m. Columbus on Saturday, 7 p.m. Noon game on Monday against Pittsburgh. Games will be streaming on sabres.com. And you can find out all the latest as it pertains to the roster for this year's rookie tournament and rookie camp. And that's the important aspect here. It's this group of players this week carrying over into the start of next week before the main camp begins. And again, Marty, this is the time where the youngsters are feeling what in your mind based on hopes and expectations beyond just the Prospects Challenge.
So it's a little different now, because when you would show up to either training camp or, you know, rookie camp, a lot of time you didn't have familiarity with the staff, with the coaches, with the city. Now with development camp in the summertime, and development camp is more of an orientation camp, it allows the players to get more familiar with the facilities, with the trainers, with everybody that you're going to. So I think there's an excitement for those players that are coming to Prospect Challenge, because they're happy to see the trainers. They're happy to see the same, the buddies that maybe they've been keeping on touch through Snapchat and Instagram and text or whatever over the last 2 months. So that to me is fun. I remember coming from my first training camp to my second training camp, and now knowing that I knew players, I knew people, I had seen them playing in juniors or playing in college hockey, and then I was going to get to know them again and get to hang out with them again. So there's an excitement. That excitement ends really quickly, because you're on the ice today, you're on the ice tomorrow, and then boom, you're now, you know, Thursday night you go to bed and there's butterflies, right? Because you know you got a game Friday already. But also, let's point out that those junior guys – mostly the junior guys, but there's some AHL guys that obviously are going to be at Prospect Challenge, but the junior guys have been in camp for a while now. They had the junior camp starting, you know, mid to late August, and so they're ready for that. They're not coming in, you know, feeling like they're unprepared. They're prepared and they're ready for it. So the butterflies may not be as intense as if you were just showing up for camp.
Do you think more of the, you know, first rounders, or, you know, anybody that has, I don't know, a certain status as far as games played, like, do these players know already that they're going to be in the main camp? Or I guess I'm asking, can guys truly overperform here in this rookie camp to get a longer look at the main camp?
My quick answer would be no. And just because there is certain players that you will probably keep them in the main camp for a few days, right? Some of the players that are here at Prospect Challenge that will, and if they perform really well in Prospect Challenge, they will earn themselves more days in the main camp. But I don't think anybody that's on the Prospect Challenge roster the way that they will perform will make a difference if they stay or not. I think most of them, you know, your group that is, okay, this group will advance, this group will go back to juniors. And if somebody performs extremely well, then it's great. You get that tournament end meeting, that exit meeting, and you're like, you know what? You were fantastic, and we want you to go back to juniors and do exactly that. And next year, that you're opening to main camp and all of it. So I don't, because you got to plan, right? You got to plan your practice schedule, your roster schedule. So I think that this is already set, but that doesn't mean that even if you're maybe a sixth round pick, or, you know, you're an invitee to Prospect Challenge, that you can't build something for the next year. So my answer would be no. There's nobody that's going to come in and earn themselves a place into the main camp if they weren't already on that roster. But you can maybe earn yourself a contract. Maybe mm-hmm. you can earn yourself something for next year. That's really where it's at.
You might need to help me with the promo. I've launched the Milwaukee Bugs here and may have consumed one. The Sabres are joining forces with Topps Friendly Markets to wind down this summer with the exciting tour stops, including tonight, the final one, Elmwood Ave in Buffalo. And it happens from 4:30 to 7:30. Spin a prize wheel for fun giveaways. Enter an exclusive sweepstakes for home opener tickets and signed jerseys. And of course, test your skills at the inflatable hockey shot. Visit sabres.com/tour for full details. Mm-hmm. We've delayed it long enough.
You did
the
well.
Vegas Golden Knights are the team of the day. It's next on Sabres Live.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back at Sabres Live. Just realized, Marty, that maybe I didn't swallow a bug last segment. It could have just been after effects of inhaling smoke at the Youngblood concert last night. May have been a little bit of that going on. Anyway,
you know what? You mentioned bug. Yesterday, I took the kids to school. I had a caterpillar on the window that made the trek from home to school and back home on the window. And when I got home, I like pulled it off the window and I put it in the bushes. I'm like, I thought it was just going to fly away, but it was hanging on like to the glass. Like it was me on the hood of a car.
So Frank Saravalli is trying his best to get us not to talk about Vegas today because he just posted that his sources say Minnesota's Kirill Kaprizov has turned down an extension believed to be 8 years, $128 million. That would have made him the highest paid player in the NHL. At
by 16, a lot.
$16 million. Well, yeah, but for a short period of time.
Yes.
But still, yes. You're
$2 million, like Leon Draisaitl is at 14 this year, highest paid. Right. And Kaprizov would have turned down 8 years, $16 million a year average. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, first of all, I get if Kaprizov was to sign long-term at around 15, mm-hmm. and I would have said, great. 16, I would have said, okay, like he's playing hard to get and he's trying to maximize, but the cap's going up and he's a fantastic player. But I mean, rumors yesterday from Elliot Friedman was that maybe McDavid wants to get a short-term deal, 2 years, at somewhere around $16 million so that it allows the Oilers to have more flexibility moving forward to try to win a cup. And so, I mean, if McDavid's willing to take somewhere around 16, 17, I don't see Kaprizov, like, getting more than that. Like, I mean, it's Connor McDavid, but I get it if you're taking a hometown discount.
But it does tie in with the team of the day because Jack Eichel's in the same boat. Now,
yes.
He hasn't signed yet. We know he's not going to get Kaprizov and McDavid money, but he's going to be around Draisaitl money, wouldn't you think? Marner Draisaitl money?
I think he's Marner somewhere signed between with Vegas. Well, signed with Toronto, traded to Vegas for 12 a year. And I think Eichel blows that out of the water. I think Eichel is definitely between 14 and 15 when it's all said and done. And now if Kaprizov goes $17 million, maybe Eichel pushes for more. But the difference here is that, well, Jack's already won a cup. Vegas is a team that I looked at the way they're built. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this could be the best team in the league. Like, I look at their forward group. I look at their defense group. Goaltending's a question mark, but for me anyway. But I'm like, this could be the best team in the league. So if you're Eichel, why would you push for 16, 17 million as opposed to just say, I'll take 14, like Leon Draisaitl and on an 8-year deal, and I'll be happy. Like, I just feel like he'll be between 14 and 15, in my opinion, when the extension is done.
Do you think he now is going to be signed before the others, meaning McDavid and Kaprizov?
You know what?
Does it really matter? I guess it doesn't really matter, right?
The more quiet of the three, right? Like McDavid said, everything's on the table, long term, short term, no term, which stirred a lot of emotion in Canada and up north because of the no term side of the answer. Part of me thinks that McDavid just answered it by being like, you know, you say a lot of things, long term, short term, no term, whatever. I don't think he was really serious about that, but he said it. You know, Kaprizov, now we know they're at an impasse. Like, if he turned down $16 million a year for 8 years, what's Bill Guerin and the Wild going to do? So I feel like Jack Eichel comes in, like, after drifting behind McDavid and Kaprizov, and in the last turn, like Lightning McQueen, he's got to woof, come around and win the race to the first one to sign their extension.
Well, he is coming off a 94-point season, which is a career high, and he didn't, though, get them to round number three. This year, they lost to the Edmonton Oilers in round number two. But to reset for our team of the day.
They probably shouldn't, but, you know, it was, you know, like, I feel like Vegas was a better team, but it plays on the ice. That's what you say all the time.
I mean, maybe you'd go there if it was seven, but it was a 5-game series, so.
I know. I'm not saying the better team in the series. I'm saying if I put both teams together, I would say Vegas is the better team. I had picked Vegas to win. But, yeah, the Oilers went in and surprised me to win in five.
So like I was saying, Vegas is the team of the day. This is their 9th season. They have made the playoffs in 7 of the 8. They have accomplished basically everything you can do as a franchise. They missed the playoffs once. They've lost in the first round, in the second round, in the conference finals, and the Stanley Cup final, and have a cup. It's quite remarkable to have accomplished this whole thing.
The bingo card is full. They've got stamped on everything.
Do they play bingo in Vegas? I think there's other forms of entertainment and gambling, but yes.
Blanco.
No, I'm quite sure. But the point is they, in their time in the NHL, and we talked about this just last week, regular seasons, Boston, Tampa, Toronto, Colorado, Vegas. Those are the top five NHL teams in regular season play in the last 8 years. And in the playoffs, only the Lightning have won more games than Vegas, a recent expansion team. I mean, we knew it in year one when they went all the way to the final.
And this was Florida going to 3 straight Stanley Cup finals and winning two, but
yes,
they still
sir.
Haven't won as many games as Vegas in the playoffs.
Pretty remarkable, isn't it? So you already just said their depth appeals to you at all positions. I think sometime, so what is it? Let's start with the forwards. What do you love? Where are your concerns?
What I love is I can't wait to see Marner and Eichel play together. I think this is going to be fantastic. They're both two high IQ playmakers, right? Like, we know Jack can be, but I feel like this will open Jack to score a little bit more. And if they are going to play with Pavel Dorofeev had 35 goals last year. So if you're going to put Dorofeev, Eichel, and Marner, maybe Dorofeev gets to 40 goals. I think that could be one of the best top lines in the National Hockey League if they stay together. I like Hurdle's game overall game. Like, you know, he can score a little bit more, but I like his overall game. Mark Stone is my concern, but when healthy, I have zero concern. He was over a point a game last year. 67 points in 66 games, but he only played 66 games. And there's always a concern with Mark Stone. But if Mark Stone is healthy and you have Dorofeev, Eichel, Marner, you have Barbashev, Hurdle, Stone, your top six is as good as any top six in the National Hockey League.
Are those your combos? Are they daily face-offs?
They were daily face-off, but I tried to look around to see what I like better, and this is what I came up to. That's what I like better. Now, maybe you put Riley Smith up, and you can make some adjustment, but that's what I like best.
Yeah, I mean, if you play Hurdle and Dorofeev together, those are the top two goal scorers from last year, both over 30 on the team. Barbashev and Dorofeev did not have the same offensive impacts in the postseason, which can definitely contributed to Vegas's early exit, in your mind, and many minds of many, against Edmonton. Eichel also didn't score a lot. The points were there, but, you know, the goals were hard to come by. So you can understand why it was a challenge. But they do seemingly have incredible balance. I'm a little concerned about Riley Smith and Brandon Saad, not for the careers they've had. Their careers have been fantastic. I just wonder if, you know, will they be able to contribute in the Vegas way? But the beauty is, I mean,
you're paying them $2 million each. It's like, okay. Right. Like, it's...
But they still have to play with really good players, so you don't want to be an anchor in any way. You want to still be able to make these players, allow these players to have the statistical success that you expect.
The only problem is they both have no trade clauses. So if it doesn't work, will they accept a trade? And you're stuck with them this year, but it's $2 million.
And they acquire Sissons. He's likely, you know, and it's on the cheap. So this is where you can again be impressed. And if you're a fan of the fourth lines, third and fourth lines, I mean, you should be excited, quite frankly, in Vegas, because with Howden, who had a career high 23 goals, you had Kolasar, had a dozen goals and 30 points, and you bring in the size of Sissons to be, again, rounding out this trio, just like the old days when Will Carrier was there, right? Like, these are ridiculously hard minutes for other teams to contend with, especially if Howden does find himself closer to the fourth line than the other line. I mean, he shouldn't, based on a 23-goal season. So
he shouldn't, but that line is probably the best fourth line in hockey, and Keegan Kolasar is a unique kind of blend of power and strength and toughness. And, I mean, we talked about Kolasar. Could he be a Buffalo Sabres for years now? He's really in a right spot in Vegas. You know, that trade that Vegas made with Nashville, trading Nick Hague to the Nashville Predators, getting Sissons and Jeremy Lauzon on a trade. Like, Nick Hague is a fantastic player, especially because you're not going to have Pietrangelo, who may be on long-term IR all season. But I feel like they were able to fit in a couple of holes on their lineup with Sissons and Lauzon that, obviously, they had to part ways with Nick Hague to be able to do that. Trading for Mitch Marner, they lost Nick Waugh. So, okay, but you're getting Mitch Marner. You're not gonna say you miss Nick Waugh. Sisson's going to come in and do the same thing, in my opinion.
Right, but Nick Waugh's been a terrific Golden Knight.
He's in Toronto. That's the problem.
Kolasar, like, they just had players in depth positions that grew and grew and grew and grew. And of course, the star power was always going to, you know, draw the headlines. But what has made them so successful is this continued development ability from the bottom. Now, you mentioned Pietrangelo. This is actually pretty significant because, you know, I have thought Vegas is the best assembled defense corps in the NHL the last number of years. So now, no longer Pietrangelo, no longer Hague, McNabb, Theodore, Hanifin, Whitecloud, your expected top four. It's great unless you get another injury.
Yes.
And now, my thinking on this is if fully healthy as a group, I think this will be Shea Theodore's biggest year in the NHL. Because it's his power play now.
Full time. It has to be.
And his numbers have always been great anyway, but there isn't like this, you know what I mean? And we talk about this all the time with the Sabres. Like, how do Power and Byram get more power play minutes when there's Dahlin out there? Well, I think everything's going to run through Hanifin. They already were, you know, a very good power play last year at number two in the NHL at over 28%. I'm pretty curious there, but real quick on the goaltending, again, they were good. They were third best in the NHL in goals against average last year. Yep. So why the concern?
My concern is that Aiden Hill, for me, is all about size and just playing the angle and let the puck hit you. I actually feel like Akira Schmid may end up being a guy that they'll rely upon more. I remember Akira Schmid with the New Jersey Devils going into the playoffs against the Rangers, beating the Rangers, getting all the shutouts. Like, it was, I feel like this is more the template of goaltenders that I like than an Aiden Hill. So I'm concerned as to, would I put Aiden Hill as a top 15, top 20 goalie in the league? No, I don't. He's not there for me. So if you're Vegas, you have one of the best group of forward, I think, especially the top two lines, one of the better group on defense, even without Pietrangelo. You're missing that punch to be saying, hey, you're going to be in the top two or three team overall this year. Look, they were second in the Western Conference last year. They had 110 points. Great. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if you want to make a step forward, your goaltending has to be a little bit better even. But you mentioned they were third in goals against last year. That's great. But they were also second in expected goals against. Like, that's how good they played defensively.
Right, which always comes back to the defense core for me. Like, I just feel like there's this incredible trust in every pair that you've put out on the ice. And, you know, keep an eye on Korzak, who's emerged enough that they were able to feel comfortable in trading Hag. And again, kind of, it sounds funny sometimes saying building from within, because we know they've never had an aversion to trading away picks, just to hit the home run in the moment. But they have had some really good stories. And obviously, you know, we talked that Eichel's going to get his money.
Yeah.
Marner's got his money. They're also going to have to look out, though, for Dorofeev, because if he duplicates last year and has consecutive seasons as the team's top goal scorer, this kid is going to all of a sudden find himself in the $7 million range at minimum.
And we know now that $7 million is, like, with the cap going up and teams wanting to retain their players, there's money available. So I think that you're right. This is, they're going to have to manage the cap. But Vegas has done it, many different ways. They have traded big money. They've reacquired players like Riley Smith. Like, oh, you know, we'll trade you, but we'll reacquire you. So they can open cap space whenever they feel they need to, and that's going to work. And look, Bruce Cassidy, the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, this is going to be year four. He's 146, 73, and 27. So that's a really solid, I mean, it goes hand in hand with Vegas's record over their history. But defensively, he's always been great. He won the Jennings Trophy as the head coach. Well, he didn't win it. Tuukka Rask and Jaroslav won it. But he was the head coach of the Boston Bruins. What was the calling card of the Bruins? They were great defensively. They didn't give up anything. So he took that to Vegas and has been able to continue doing the same thing with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Incredible tan as well. Always admire Bruce's skin behind the bench.
Well dressed. I think that's always something good. Yes.
3 days away from Sabres Fan Fest. Yes, it's all right in the middle of the Prospects Challenge this weekend, and we've got it taking place at KeyBank Center from 10 to 6 on Saturday. There's player appearances, autographs, fun hockey games, of course, and activities for the kids, giveaways, so much more. Sabres.com/FanFest for all the details. I'm sure you know them by now, but in case you don't, Sabres.com/FanFest. Back after this to wrap up Sabres Live.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
No pressure, Marty. 2 minutes left in the show. What do you got?
I got that our very own Rob Ray is going into the Buffalo Broadcasting Hall of Fame tonight. Congrats, Razor. a great list of inductees. Our friends Jixter is going in, Marielis Demler is going in, so and many more. So, but Rob Ray, I was with him Monday night. We did an event at the Miracle League of Western New York. We played beeper ball. He was my partner, Duffer. So I have to wear the blindfolds, and he has to tell me where I'm going. And the first time I was at bat, he basically didn't say anything. I ran towards third base, and he's telling me to run towards first base, but the third base beeper was going. He had no idea. The second time, in a robbery fashion, he's like, "Marty, over here!" He's yelling to me. So, but it worked. We scored a run. So, yes, you know, but we were talking about, I'm like, "You've been doing this over 20 years now." And he goes, "Yeah, it's been a long time." So, congrats to Razor and to all the others inductee in the Buffalo Broadcast Hall of Fame.
Randy Johnson is 62.
Dude, Randy Johnson.
Do you think he could still strike somebody out?
100%.
On a one-off?
He can still throw 95 probably. And it's funny because he used to talk about how they would throw 95, 96 back then. Now, you know, Chapman throws 103. So it's like different. But Randy Johnson, him and Greg Maddux, two different types of pitchers, right? Mm. But they were so good in their A-days and started with the Expos. Can't believe the Expos got rid of the big man.
Always unscripted, folks, here on Sabres Live. Ended the day with a couple of big units. We're back tomorrow for another Team of the Day.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.